Hi, my name is Michael Rosario from Saugerties, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tamaro Ian Acre, and we have all sorts of songs and sounds and stories for you today on the WGXC Morning Show. We'll include speaking with Anna Plattner and Justin Wexler of Wild Hudson Valley in Cairo. They're interviewed about their eco camp, which starts this weekend. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate on the WGXC Morning Show. It all starts after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves.
Controlled.
On air, in air, channel.
Connection.
And the moon
turns to blood.
A stream runs through.
This is the network, network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Saturday, June 25th, turn out to the Widow Jane Mine in Rosendale for a performance from Catskill's Brian DeWan. He'll be performing with tape cartridges, a melody djinn, an accordion, an auto harp, and his own voice. Hear one of Catskill's most notorious performers in a unique setting in the Widow Jane Mine in Rosendale, 3 p.m. Saturday, June 25th. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Spike's Record Rack in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. The Daily Freeman reports the New York State Thruway Authority has announced it is about to begin work on a $9.6 million infrastructure improvement project on I-87 between Saugerties and Kingston. The project includes the milling and resurfacing of a 7-mile stretch of I-87 from just after Exit 20, Saugerties Woodstock, to just before Exit 19, Kingston, the Kingston-Rhinecliffe Bridge. Approximately 37,000 motorists travel that stretch of I-87 every day, according to the authority. The project includes the fuel service area at the Ulster Service Area and the parking area on I-87 northbound at milepost 99.2. Safety upgrades are slated to include reflective line striping, the authority said. Motorists may encounter lane closures on the thruway, along with traffic shifts and stoppages. Thruway Authority Executive Director Matthew J. Driscoll said in a statement, quote, "This pavement improvement project ensures an improved travel experience for motorists in this area and continues to provide a safe and reliable roadway for the millions of motorists who travel on the thruway every year," unquote. The project is being coordinated by Callinan Industries of Albany and is expected to be finished in the fall, but the completion date is weather-dependent, authorities said. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Mara Rosner reports for Columbia Green Media that the town of Cooksackie has a proposal for regulating cannabis sales, a zoning amendment. Town Councilperson Michael R. Veder said on June 21st, and I quote, "The sale of cannabis needs to be regulated to certain areas of our community, specifically commercial and industrial areas," end quote. The proposal also includes requiring a site plan review and a special use permit for any cannabis business in the community. New York legalized recreational use of cannabis last year, and next year is expected to allow retail sales. Cooksackie holds a public hearing on the proposal on June 12th, and you can read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Natasha Vaughn Holdridge reports for Columbia Green Media that the now familiar seasonal cement barriers will return to Warren Street when arrangements are completed, Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson said on June 21st. The blocks and planters that allow for the extension of dining spaces for businesses are now limited to restaurants, coffee shops, and similar eateries. Quote, "The Hudson Business Coalition is still finalizing things," unquote, Johnson said. Quote, "It should happen anytime within the next week and a half," unquote. A representative of the business group could not immediately be reached for comment. Johnson said once installed, the barriers will be removed in early October, and the last he heard, roughly 20 businesses will get the blocks. The mayor said the program will be much the same as it has been in the past 2 years. Quote, "The only difference is it will just be restaurants, coffee shops, juice bars, and stuff like that," unquote, Johnson said. Hudson Department of Public Works Superintendent Rob Perry said the police have not received any applications for the barriers. Quote, "Police have to review the applications. At some point, once the applications are submitted to the police department, they will conduct their review, and then they will let us know. And once everything is ready to go, then we will schedule a time to install the blocks and the planters," unquote. Last year, blocks and planters were placed outside of about 100 spaces, and it took more than a day to install them all, Perry said. Each block weighs approximately 1 ton. In 2020, the city decided that providing the option to extend storefront operations into the parking lane would support local businesses with post-pandemic economic recovery. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Maury Thompson reports for the Post-Star about the election this fall between Democrat Andrea Smythe and Republican Jake Ashby for the 43rd State Senate District that will soon include Rensselaer County and portions of Washington and Albany counties. Ashby is a two-term assembly incumbent, and the paper says Smythe is, and I quote, "a policy analyst and advocate for state government issues for about 30 years," end quote. Smythe has a very specific proposal to rein in health care in New York, as insurance companies barely give hospitals and health care providers enough to maintain adequate staff. Ashby said Smythe's proposal merits consideration and agreed health care costs are a large issue in the state. He said, and I quote, "I think we need to do a better job of recruiting providers and recruiting them to stay in New York," end quote. Both candidates live in Rensselaer County, and Ashby was a U.S. Army Reserve captain who served two combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, then was a Rensselaer County legislator before serving in the state assembly. Smythe will retire from her current job as chief executive officer for the New York State Coalition for Children's Behavioral Health on July 1st. She narrowly lost the Rensselaer County executive election to Republican Steve McLaughlin in 2017. Read more about this story in the Post Star.
Melanie Lekasevic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that Ravina Queeman's Selkirk High School senior Uchenna Uba is the 2022 New York State champion in Division II girls discus. Uba competed at the New York State Public High School Athletic Association State Championships at Cicero North Syracuse High School on June 10th and 11th. She came in first place with a score of 132-10 and second place in the Division II girls shot put with a score of 38-2.5. Uba then went on to compete at the state championships and placed first in discus and seventh in shot put. RCS Board of Education President Edward Reveal saluted UBA's accomplishments at the state competition during the June 15th board meeting, saying, quote, congratulations to her and for representing RCS at the state meet this past week, unquote. UBA's accomplishments were also honored by the RCS Athletic Department when she received the Female Athlete of the Year award on June 9th. She was also the Section 2 champion in both weight toss and shot put in indoor track and field this year. Read more about this story at theupstater.com.
Chris Bragg reports for the Times Union that on May 31st, the Brunswick Community Center, a taxpayer-supported venue, held an event for Representative Elise Stefanik where certain taxpayers were not allowed to enter. Even though the public owns the venue, and I quote, people suspected of being political opponents, end quote, to Stefanik were not allowed to enter. Republican Phil Harrington, the town supervisor, set up the event for the Republican congressperson. 2 years ago, then-Congressman Antonio Delgado, a Democrat, was not allowed to use the same community center by a different Brunswick Republican elected official, town clerk Bill Lewis. At the town's June 9th meeting, Kathy Betzinger, the former chair of the Brunswick Democratic Party, said, and I quote, you're all the same party, you're all using it politically, and I just have a problem with that. This is our community center, so we either have one set of rules or it's over, end quote. Harrington acknowledged that the town bylaws likely prohibited use of the center for political events, even though that is just what he did. Harrington said, and I quote, I didn't check with the town attorney because I know what the answer would have been quickly, end quote. Rensselaer County GOP operative Richard W. Christ at one point during the event ordered the doors to the venue locked to keep out those deemed political opponents. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, showers and thunderstorms are likely before 4 p.m., then a possibility of thunderstorms after 5 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 73 degrees. Thursday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 57 degrees. And on Friday, patchy fog before 8 a.m., otherwise mostly sunny with a high near 81 degrees. And Friday night, mostly clear, with a temperature low of around 58 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXE, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia Counties.
On Thursday, June 23rd, tune in to all sorts of creative community radio at 90.7 FM, including at 10 a.m. It's time for Cheryl Kay's Situation Fluxus Jazz Show. This week, she talks with the Toronto-based group Queen Kong about their new album, Frey. Then at 11 a.m., tune in for some transformational listening. And Jal Tarang, a set of porcelain bowls of varying size filled with water used in ragas in India. Then at noon after the local news, Brad Munkle beams in from Greenville with some ear candy, jazz, funk, soul, and more. At 2 p.m. and 3 p.m., hear about the latest congressional hearings about the January 6th insurrection on What's the Frequency Meet Kenneth, and turn on the news. At 7 p.m., Chris Funkhauer has Poet Radio for you, and then we beam in the radio art from the Radio Art Zone, a European radio art project, at 8 p.m. Then we're live from Toronto at 9 p.m. with Andrew O'Connor and his pirate radio show Disco 3000. At 10 p.m., Ted Barron has the Boogie Woogie Flu live from the WGXC Hudson Studio on Warren Street, 90.7 FM, WGXC.
All together now, all together now, all together now. To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Saturday, June 25th, turn out to the Widow Jane Mine in Rosendale for a performance from Catskill's Brian DeWan. He'll be performing with tape cartridges, a melody djinn, an accordion, an auto harp, and his own voice. Hear one of Catskill's most notorious performers in a unique setting in the Widow Jane Mine in Rosendale, 3 p.m. Saturday, June 25th. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Hi, this is Michael Wilde inviting you to Mostly Singles, and if you like what you're hearing, you'll love this show. Rarefied music, premieres, and guests. It's different every time, and a podcast too. Go to wgxc.org. Mostly Singles, every fourth Tuesday at 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, June 23rd. Temperatures range from 56 degrees in Windham to 60 degrees in Claremont this morning. Soil warmed up some. It is now at 64 degrees. A band of rain will pass over the region today, moving west to east. It will be slow and pushed out of the way by a cold front, so we will get a high of 69 at 4 p.m., and rain chances disappear after 10 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 56 degrees. Cool, but also muggy with dew points also in the 50s. Friday will be pretty warm with a high of 85. Very light winds and dew points in the low 60s. A humid 60 degrees overnight takes us into a warm and dry Saturday. A high of 90 degrees. Overnight, it hits 63 degrees before bouncing back up to 90 on Sunday. Rain returning in the afternoon, bringing some possible thunder. Pollen levels for today will be low. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 6:04 a.m., high tide at 11:35 a.m., and low tide once again at 6:12 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 73 degrees. Sunset today will be at 8:21 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:16 a.m. Looking way up, we see solar wind speed is currently 414 kilometers per second at 13.5 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 6 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 80. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Friday Night Racer of Hartsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Cheryl Kay, host of the Jazz Disturbance on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The Jazz Disturbance features jazz and other improvised music. Tune in on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wave Farm Radio app on your smartphone. Playlists are posted at facebook.com/CKDisturbance.
What's the most important issue?
Getting back to the basics of teaching children, not teaching them critical race theory.
And what is critical race theory?
Well, I'm not going to get into the specifics of it because I don't understand it that much, but it's something that I don't, what little bit that I know, I don't care for.
And what have you heard that you don't,
well,
that you
I'm
don't
not,
like?
Well, I'm not going to, you know, I don't... I don't have that much knowledge on it, but okay. It's something that I'm not, that I don't care for.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Now, I fully understand that a gas tax holiday alone is not going to fix the problem, but it will provide families some immediate relief, just a little bit of breathing room.
President Biden called on Congress to suspend the federal gas tax for 3 months and urged oil companies to increase production and refining capacity. Wyoming Representative John Barrasso and other GOP leaders criticized the Biden administration's attempts to provide relief at the pump.
Why are we in this position? Because Joe Biden continues to take the side of the radical, extreme environmentalists who want to strangle American energy.
Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell told lawmakers Wednesday a recession is a possibility and addressed interest rate hikes he says are aimed at tackling inflation.
My colleagues and I are acutely aware that high inflation poses significant hardship, especially on those least able to meet the higher costs of essentials like food, housing, and transportation.
A procedural Senate vote on the bipartisan gun safety bill passed 64-34 in less than 2 hours after the final text was released, paving the way to a final vote. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he's advocating for the legislation becoming law.
I hope we'll be able to pass it. I think it's a significant step in the right direction to deal with the two issues that I think it focuses on, school safety and mental health.
The bill would expand background checks for prospective gun buyers between the ages of 18 and 21 and incentivize states to provide access to juvenile records. At a Texas Senate committee hearing in response to the Uvalde school shooting, Baylor College psychiatry professor Dr. Laurel Williams talked about expanding the state's mental health services child psychiatry access network to give families quick and easy access to mental health professionals.
So when they call, they can hear back from us within 5 minutes, and if they need to speak to a child psychiatrist within 30 minutes.
The U.S. Supreme Court ruled the state of Maine may not exclude religious schools from a state tuition program. This is the first time this particular restriction on non-sectarian schools has reached the United States Supreme Court in more than four decades. Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty Vice President Eric Rosbach.
Anyone who lives in Maine can get this tuition benefit. Once you've opened it up, they said, then it creates a problem because you're essentially penalizing people for sending their kid to a school that has religious exercise.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Tom Rowe from Wave Farm with the Daily Radio News. Inside Radio reports that the latest wacky legislation from Florida goes into effect July 1st. Drivers must lower the volume of any car device so that it is not heard at a distance beyond 25 feet. Florida House Bill 1435 was created to stop unsanctioned pop-up events organized on social media, according to Republican sponsor Tom Leak, who said the events were, quote, invasions, unquote, that shut down coastal communities. The new law says that a person, quote, operating or occupying a motor vehicle on a street or highway may not operate or amplify the sound produced by a radio, tape player, compact disc player, portable music or video player, cellular telephone, tablet computer, laptop computer, stereo, television, musical instrument, or other mechanical or electronic sound-making device or instrument, which sound emanates from the motor vehicle so that sound is, quote, A, plainly audible at a distance of 25 feet or more from the motor vehicle, or B, louder than necessary for the convenient hearing by persons inside the vehicle in areas adjoining private residences, churches, schools, or hospitals, unquote. How loud is a radio one can hear from 25 feet away? Quote, I feel like they're targeting people, unquote, Jacksonville resident Dwan Leonard said to News 4 Jacksonville. Quote, when they say plainly audible, that's basically an excuse to pull anyone over, because if you have your windows down and your music up even halfway, plainly audible would be even somebody on the street being able to hear your music, unquote. Go to waveform.org for more radio news.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Albany Symphony, presenting a community concert and fireworks on Friday, June 24th at Basilica Hudson. Food and drink vendors and family fun zone at 5 p.m., followed at 7:30 by a program of new music and summertime favorites by the Albany Symphony and fireworks grand finale. Open to the public. Information at albanysymphony.com.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and I'm now joined by, I didn't ask your pronunciation, so let's see how I do. Anna Plattner and Justin Wexler from, where is it, Wild Hudson Valley. I want to say Hudson Valley Wild, but Wild Hudson Valley.
There is a Hudson Valley Wild.
I know, that's why I got it mixed up. I Googled and I got both things, and I was like, which one is which? So you guys are Wild Hudson Valley.
Wild, yes.
Hudson Valley. And you're in Cairo, and so tell people what Wild Hudson Valley is.
So I started Wild Hudson Valley after I graduated from Bard with a master's in education. I really needed to get out of the classroom and into the outdoors, which is where I've been teaching since I was a teenager. And it started off as basically a side thing. So I started this a few years before Anna joined me. And I would basically do presentations for historical societies and nature walks for conservation organizations in Columbia, Albany, Green, Ulster, Dutchess County, and in various parts of the Hudson Valley. I was joined by Anna a couple of years later, and over time we have turned this into a very much full-time endeavor. And do you want to go a little bit into what we do and our...
Yeah, so like Justin said, it started out very much doing educational programs on nature, ecology, the human and environmental history of the area, mostly working with other like land trusts, conservation organizations. But when the pandemic came, we decided that we really wanted to start hosting on our own property. So in Cairo, my family has had land there. I grew up in the area, and my family has had a 90-acre property that we pretty much use for recreation. And Justin and I started farming there in 2015. And we grow all different medicinal herbs, and we have a small forest farm where we do edible mushrooms, nut crops, fruit trees. Last year, for the first time, we opened up programming on our own property, which really allowed us to teach exactly what we wanted to teach and do more hands-on workshops and go into forest farming more. My background is more in natural resources. I graduated from Cornell in natural resources and got very much into forest farming after I graduated. Jess and I met, we got to know each other through working at American Ginseng Farm, a large-scale wild simulated ginseng operation. Ginseng is a little forest understory herb that's native to the Catskills, and it's one of the many medicinal crops that we grow. So since then, we decided to start hosting overnight guests on the property. So not just doing daytime programs, but weekend-long nature camps for people of all ages. So that's the endeavor we're starting right now. We're actually only just 10 minutes away from here, just down in Cairo. And this is our opening weekend for what we're calling our eco camp. So.
Oh, boy.
Someone's excited about your eco camp. So what happens at your eco camp? Is it for kids or is it for adults? Is it for people from around here? Or is it people from the city? Or is it all those things?
Everybody is welcome. We try to do this in a way so that people from different demographics, different backgrounds can get equal access to getting out to the outdoors and really immersing themselves. For our overnights, you know, overnight stays, you know, we're ironing that all out right now. But in general, like, we still offer many public workshops, we just want to get people more comfortable with the outdoors. And really our mission is to connect people with the past of the Hudson Valley. So Anna, you know, had mentioned that her background is in natural resources and agroforestry. Now, while my career is in environmental education, my background is really in ethnohistory. So I've spent really my entire life studying the life of the native people who lived in the Hudson Valley in the pre-contact period and their history as they were forced west over the past 300 years. You know, I've made many connections with people in their descendant communities and made many friends with them in Ontario, Wisconsin, Oklahoma. And so what we're doing is by connecting the present with the past, with people who knew how to live with the land here, who know how to connect with it in the right way, we're hoping to try to bring modern people who don't have those connections with the natural world and foster that so that, you know, people start to care about the world and connect with other species, for example, or with the landscape in a way that they might not have otherwise.
Yeah, so so you teach that at the eco camp or?
Yeah, we go into a little bit of everything. So we will host guests on occasion as well. But for an example of a weekend itinerary, Friday night, our campers will, you know, gather around a communal fire and we'll talk about traditional star lore as well as bringing in Western science as well. Talk about the different night sounds that we're hearing. During the day, we'll have programming, which includes nature walks, but they're not just any nature walk. While we are looking at the different species around us, we are also learning to read the landscape and see what stories it can tell us. So that includes how different trees, for example, what they can provide for people and how they provided for the native people who live here and for their descendants today. Or, you know, different bird species we encountered, there are stories that go behind their names in local indigenous languages. In addition, you know, we often will lead tourists through our forest farming operations. So we'll get to show people how you can how you can sustain yourself using some of these more modern innovations in agroforestry off of older forests without having, you know, the need to cut the forest, because a lot of landowners end up cutting their woods in order to pay their taxes. And we'll also have night walks for the public. I mentioned guests coming in. So we're still ironing out how many guests we're having this year, but this coming weekend, which is our opening weekend, we'll have Misty Cook, who's a Mohican herbalist from the Mohican Reservation in Wisconsin, and she'll be doing a presentation and walk on traditional medicines. A friend of ours, a Lenape elder from the Moravian Town Reserve in Ontario, will be visiting in August doing a corn husk doll workshop. We're also hoping to have various historians, geologists, mushroom crazy people come in. Well, how else do you describe people who are
mushroom fanatics?
Mushroom fanatics.
They're fanatic. The people that are into like wild mushrooms are really fanatical about it, aren't they?
Yes.
They can. We've been growing mushrooms on in the forest farm for years now.
Edible mushrooms. And medicinal, but not the fun mushrooms.
I think Labor Day weekend, we're planning a shiitake mushroom inoculation workshop. So teaching people how to grow their own shiitake mushrooms. But then we'll also go on a mushroom identification walk and make like a whole weekend, a mushroom weekend on Labor Day. So...
yeah, maybe after the rain the next couple of days, we might see... I haven't seen any wild mushrooms in the forest yet this year.
Yeah, we've been... there's an invasive... Well, I say invasive. We don't know for sure, but it seems very aggressive. Species of mushroom called golden oyster mushrooms. They're bright yellow on the top and white gills on the underside. And for over 7-8 years now, almost 10 years, we've been getting... a lot of them growing on all the elm trees that have died from elm phloem necrosis. So we had sort of a mass wipe out of the elm trees, and these mushrooms came in. I say that they're invasive just because they're not actually native to North America. They're an escaped cultivar. So people were growing them on mushroom farms, and the spores escaped and went feral. And so we've been finding a lot of those this past month. The season's about over, though.
Yeah,
but this rain might trigger one more flush. And then when the temperatures start to warm up even more, then we'll start to get chanterelle and a lot of the summer
black
mushrooms.
Black trumpets should be coming up soon.
Yeah.
I think last year we had like the biggest chanterelle. It was either last year or the year before. It was largest chanterelle crop on our property here that I've seen in ever since we've been here, I think.
Yeah, last year was a pretty good year.
Yeah, that was true all
the
over.
Summer, 2018, the summer we got married, was a really big year too.
Yeah, that
we
was
were
great.
Able to serve them at our wedding because we found so many. It was kind of a fun thing.
It's neat that you're bringing this sort of programming and bringing like the past into the future and the present. When Caro has all this amazing past history, this ancient forest that they found a couple years ago, that is like it's the oldest forest ever discovered or something, older than the Gilboa Forest, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, and it's like behind the dump, or not the dump,
the highway
apartment.
I visited
where the snowplows are. Yeah,
I forgot you've been there.
Yeah, I was there when I was working at Cooperative Extension. We went back there just to check it out, and yeah, it really is remarkable to see all these petrified stumps on the ground, and just to know how ancient they are.
Mm-hmm.
We just found a piece of mudstone on the creek, actually, and it looked like there were fossilized leaves on it, which is kind of trippy to think that many times over many millions of years there have been swamps here with giant tree ferns or bald cypress type trees. I don't even know what they were. It's wild to see evidence of that.
Yeah, driving around here, I'm constantly thinking of the giant glaciers that just carved everything. Everything is carved out by glaciers here.
Not every time, but since I was a kid. So I grew up in Hudson and got to see, one of the best views of the Catskill Mountain escarpment pretty much every single day. And since I was a kid, I've always liked to imagine that point in time, 15,000 years ago or so, when the glaciers had gotten to a point where the Catskill Mountains' highest peaks were islands in an ocean of ice, and how wild that must have been. I couldn't even imagine what it would have been like to stand on these little islands just with ice in every direction.
It's crazy. Amazing to think about. What do are people most surprised about when you're teaching them about plants that are here, or what have we forgotten about that? There's so many things that Americans, used medicinally that have sort of been lost over time.
So one thing that I find really amazing is that the native people who call this region their ancestral land and who now live primarily in Ontario and Wisconsin have, even with all that they've lost in their exodus west, have held on to a wealth of plant knowledge. And I've met many people who are very, very generous in sharing with me how they use plants for different purposes. And combining that with many years of archival research, I've been putting together a huge database since I started in 2004 to try to understand their relationship with plants in the past. And I think what blows the public's mind is how virtually every native plant species we encounter has some recorded use. A point I'll make, especially to kids, when I'm getting kids out in the woods, is if you need glue, the forest has it for you right there. If you need fiber for making a fishing line or rope, it's right there. If you need to dye things different colors, everything is there. And we really focus also on having people touch the plants and smell them and sometimes taste them, which I find to be one of the best ways to memorize these different species. It's something that we're so focused on visuals in our society that we forget I was going to be cheesy and say to stop and smell the roses, but literally, you know, our brains are wired, like we've connected with plants for, I mean, a million years longer. Our human and pre-human ancestors lived very close to the environment, and we are made to memorize these kind of things. You just have to learn how to do it. So bringing in, for example, and I'll wrap up in a second, but the local native languages like Mohican, Algonquian languages are extremely descriptive, even poetic in how they construct words. And their languages are really a key to understanding their relationship with the landscape, including plant names or animal names. And it's one way that I used in teaching, that both Anna and I use, in teaching people on the uses of different plants and way to memorize them is through their native names, which often unlock a lot about them. So I think that's one of the things that people really amazes people, I think.
I think we need to hear an example.
I don't know.
Can you come up with I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, I think a neat one maybe is the word for mountain laurel. It literally translates as spoon tree or spoon making tree. And the wood is when it actually takes on a really, it's very fine grained and takes a fine polish. So it was a preferred wood for making the large wooden spoons that are traditional to Native people in the Northeast. They made fun of white people spoons a lot back in the day. By the way, they said that you must have been exhausting for the number of times you need to lift it up and down to your mouth, because traditional native spoons are kind of like a small bowl with a handle that gets passed down through the generations because they're carved very beautifully. So that's an example. I think, you know, we call it mountain laurel based on its location, that it's evergreen, location of where they're generally found. But their name for it describes the fact that it's the best wood for wooden spoons. So maybe not the best example. It's what came to mind, though. And they're in full bloom right now, by the way.
What else is rampant right now? Is strawberry season is just about ending?
Yeah, that's winding down, except at the high elevations. Mulberries are ripening, although if you find a native mulberry, you're really lucky. We've only come across one or two ever in the Hudson Valley. They've been hybridized out by Asian mulberries.
Cattail shoots are really good for picking right now. You want to, you know, when cattails are just coming up on the edges of ponds or in marshes or swamps, the inner part of the shoots, when they're part maybe like a quarter to halfway full grown, can be harvested and eaten like bamboo shoots or bamboo hearts. They're really tender and great on the inside. So that's another one that's perfect right now.
A lot of greens right now.
Reishi mushrooms as well are just about ready to be harvested in hemlock woods. So, yeah, these are all the types of things that we talk about on our guided walks and on the workshops and at our new eco camp.
It seems like a lot of this is sort of becoming popular in different old things and fixing things, like the DIY movement, and the state legislature even passed a right to repair bill so that you don't waste all these products. I'm just wondering if, like, there's been like the flavor of the day, like ramps were really big a couple years ago. Is there a problem with like people picking too many ramps or hurting the thing because they become popular?
So that is a risk, especially mostly on public lands. So if we're talking about ramps in particular, they're a very slow-growing forest understory plant. From seed, a plant might not actually get to the stage where it's starting to produce its own seed and where it's mature and reproductive for like 8 or plus years. So you can imagine that if one person comes through and harvests most of an area, it won't be able to repopulate itself fast enough to keep up with that. And that's why ramps are particularly vulnerable. But personally, we know of many private properties where there are multiple acres of solid ramps. And in those circumstances, personally, we don't have a problem with harvesting the bulbs of ramps.
Oh, it's easy to do sustainably. More of,
it's very easy to harvest ramps sustainably. We actually, in towards the end of May, we had a ramp stewardship workshop because there's been a that's a very popular issue right now in terms of
ramp shaming.
Ramp shaming is a real thing.
First, ramps were popular, and now ramp shaming is popular.
Yes, exactly. And there's a lot of misinformation in terms of, for example, the popular narrative is to harvest only one leaf per plant. But if you think about that, a ramp leaf normally, or a ramp plant only has 1 to 3 leaves a year, and they only photosynthesize for about a month, a little bit more. And if you're taking 50% of that plant's ability to photosynthesize for the year, you know, that over time is going to weaken the plant. Like if you do that every year, and the plant most likely will not have the energy to produce seed, and it might not divide clonally because ramps also spread just like garlic, where they'll produce more like little bulbs off of the side because it's an allium species. So that's not really the answer. Harvesting one leaf per plant is way oversimplifying a larger stewardship practice. And so on, we had this workshop earlier this year where we talked about also dividing plants where they're all growing in a clump. You can spread them out and allow each plant to grow multiple bulbs over the course of the years. You can also plant seeds. And a combination of all of these stewardship practices is really the best way to manage ramps. You just got to be really careful on public lands because you don't know who else is also harvesting. And it's in those circumstances where you can have a complete collapse of a population very quickly.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Anna Plattner and Justin Wexler from Wild Hudson Valley in Cairo. And I'm wondering if you can sense this at all on the local level, but is climate change affecting things here in the Hudson Valley? I mean, it happens slowly, so it's sort of difficult to tell, but it seems like in the past 10 or 15 years, the storms have gotten more severe and more often. It seems like other things are happening. What are your opinions?
I'm sure. And it's, you know, invasive species are an easy way to tell. So with hemlock woolly adelgids, when we have really, really strong cold snaps in the winter, like below zero temperatures for multiple nights, that really sets back some invasive insect species that are killing off some of our native tree species. And as we get milder winters, their populations are expanding northward and causing declines in hemlocks, as an example. Notwithstanding the polar vortex thing that seems to be happening and is connected with climate change. I mean, it's hard to say. I've paid pretty good attention to what's going on in Green, Columbia, Albany County area since I was a kid and started nature journaling. And I have noticed many changes during the time that maybe could be linked with climate change, like bird species that have moved north. So when I was a kid, you would never have seen a black vulture in the Hudson Valley or Carolina wren. Those are among multiple species that have shifted their ranges northward. Maybe because of milder winters, it's hard to say. But I think we are definitely going to see increasingly dramatic impacts over the next decades. I hope at least, I mean, we are in kind of lucky that the Northeast is in a little bit of a better place than parts of the West or, you know, the lower Mississippi Valley for what's being forecast in terms of droughts and wet bulbs and all the horrible things that are happening. So,
yeah, what is it, 20% of the country? I thought I saw this week there was a day 20% of the country had temperatures over 100 degrees.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
And it's not summer yet.
No.
And the longhorn tick, the Texas tick, is now here, too?
The Lone Star.
The Lone Star, that's what it is.
Yeah, Longhorn, yeah. Longhorn, Lone Star.
Yeah, we've been finding them. We found them on us for a few years. I mean, I've often wondered whether there's a conspiracy. I don't know, have you heard of that they can spread a virus that can give you a sensitivity to red meat?
That's a fact. That's a thing, yeah.
But I wonder whether there's a conspiracy that somebody, you know, bioengineered this to try to make society allergic to red meat to reduce red meat consumption and maybe reduce emissions of methane and carbon dioxide.
I'm sure that theory exists on the internet, yes. Somewhere. Someone is saying it. So what haven't you told us about Wild Hudson Valley?
Well, we talked a bit about our guided walks and all the different like subjects that we teach about. And we mentioned the eco camp, but we didn't get in so much into our lives right now, like 24/7 are preparing for our opening weekend this weekend. So we have four campsites on the property, and each campsite comes with its own canvas bell tent with a queen bed and two twin beds inside. So we're kind of borderline glamping, although we're not advertised. While we provide a lot of amenities that a traditional glamping place would, that's because we want to accommodate people who may not have any camping equipment, who might be coming from another city, New York City. And so we provide a lot of these amenities, but we're not necessarily going for the champagne on ice vibe. It's more the we want everyone to be comfortable, even if you've never camped before. Mm-hmm. That's a real goal of ours, is to like immerse people in nature in a way that they can feel comfortable and confident. So we've been getting these tents set up, and we are building a gathering space. It's a canvas roofed pavilion with a fire pit underneath for our Friday night campfire, where we're going to do stargazing and storytelling. And we've been getting our trail network already, finally putting the signs up. And we're really excited for the opening weekend this weekend. We're going to have the camp open from now until Columbus Day weekend. And our website is wildhudsonvalley.com. And we have a section on there all about the eco camp. And with the weekend schedule, all the different amenities, as well as some of our favorite area attractions for guests to check out when they're staying. So we're really excited for that. And we're trying to spread the word of our opening.
And do you sell plants? And like if locals live here and don't want to attend a camp, but they like to get some ginseng or something, do you guys do that?
Yeah, actually, we didn't mention this. We have a small CSA. We call them Wild Harvest Boxes. It's a monthly delivery of 6 to 8 different primarily foraged or forest farmed ingredients. We just had our June delivery, which contained cattail shoots, reishi mushrooms, and a lot of the plants that we just talked about. So that's a monthly CSA for the months of April to November. So that's the primary way that we distribute the produce that we either wild harvest or grow ourselves, because we also grow a lot of rare varieties of corn, beans, and squash. So that from seeds that Justin's worked hard to, will you explain that?
In trying to, you know, in our efforts to understand what life was like here in the past, we've worked hard to try to find the oldest varieties of domesticated plants that were grown here 400 years ago, or at least representative of what was grown here by native people. So this entire CSA, the Wild Harvest Box that Anna described, to go along with our mission of education, it really, the purpose, and I hope that, you know, this is true for our customers, is not so much to, you know, get novel or cool ingredients or for cooking, but to learn about these plants and how they're actually edible and delicious or healthy, but also what role they've played historically. And we include an entire write-up with every box that goes into every ingredient we're including, that talks about the plant's place in the ecosystem, how it's traditionally used, how you can use it today, and how you can grow it or steward it yourself in the wild.
And I'm seeing on your website you can pick up one of your CSA boxes at Kitty's Market and in Hudson, or Left Bank Ciders in Catskill, so you don't have to necessarily drive out to Cairo.
Exactly. Yep. So our Eco Camp is a pickup location, but we're so happy to be collaborating with Left Bank Ciders and Kitties on this. We do also sell mushrooms to Kitties for their market. So that's another place that people can pick up our produce, is at Kitties Market. It's across the street from the train station in Hudson. And they just opened a restaurant. It's really awesome. So I'm going to plug that too, because we really, really love working with them.
And you mentioned ginseng, but we also actually do sell ginseng seed in season. We stratify it ourselves and sell it in the fall, along with select starts sometimes, but that's not anything that we can promise. We eat herbal tea blends, tinctures, salves. Those are also things that they're kind of side, you know, things that we sell locally and can be found in some stores.
All right. I see we've only got about 2.5 minutes left before the news comes up. So we did have a lot to talk about. Is there anything we forgot to mention?
I think we've about covered it.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, we have a lot of public programming coming up pretty much every weekend throughout this entire summer. We have either a guided nature walk or a workshop or a moonlight walk on the farm, depending on when the full moon is.
Oh, and Thursday nights, too.
And
you can't
on
forget
Thursday nights,
Hudson River Maritime Museum. We've been doing boat tours since last year, so we do an evening tour on the Solaris, a solar-powered boat, out of Kingston, out into the Hudson River, as the sun is setting, and it's completely silent because it's solar-powered, and that's a really magical tour where we basically, it's a question and answer session full of folklore and stories where we'll talk about what life was like 500 years ago on the Hudson River. So.
And by the time we're coming back to the dock at the end of the night, it's completely dark out.
It's really
beautiful. So that's most Thursday nights throughout the summer in Kingston. And I think that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
That
so
sounds
you can
pretty...
check out our events calendar at wildhudsonvalley.com. Mm-hmm. And
boat ride sounds pretty magical.
It's really great.
It's so fun.
All right. So, yes, go to wildhudsonvalley.com for more information. We've been talking to Anna Plattner and Justin Wexler from Wild Hudson Valley in Cairo. Thank you guys for being here today. This was great to hear all this stuff.
Thank you.
We're going to hear Liquid Assets from Jesse Cudler and Graham Stephenson from their 2022 album Apposite Rejoinder. Stephenson plays amplified trumpet, and Cudler plays guitar, electronics, radios, transmitters, and tapes on the album. Here is Liquid Assets from Jesse Cudler and Graham Stephenson.